Okay, so the next item on our agenda is charter schools. And as we begin this part of the agenda, you'll notice that we have quite a few items that are related to charter schools on our agenda. This is partly due to the number of new and major modifications that were received this year. There are 5 applications for charter schools underway via CSAC. I just note that Frieri Newark withdrew their application for a new school this morning. Each application requires a significant amount of time and energy on the part of the Department of Education, CSAC, and the State Board of Education. I'd like to thank our board members, especially our CSAC representatives, Dr. Noble and Dr. Lofink, for the incredible amount of time that is required to review the applications. As an authorizer, we take this role very seriously. You'd see this represented in the amount of time and energy that's been dedicated to reviewing the applications and discussing these questions within our meetings. There are 3 elements that contribute to the success of the schools: academic, financial, and organizational. All 3 of these items are essential to successful schools, and it's our job to ensure that all 3 are adequately explored as a part of our review of any applications that come before us. This in-depth review by the department, the board, and CSAC give us the chance to ask those questions to ensure that all 3 of these elements are strong, because if they're not, then we don't have successful schools. Charter schools in our state give students and their families options to find a school model that works best for them. These options are important, and it's our responsibility as a board to ensure that those options are high quality and that the students are best set up for success, because we want to find schools and options that work for these students. So as we begin the conversation, I just want to emphasize that the questions that we raise as part of this process are in the spirit of strengthening our system in a way that we can provide the best educational opportunities for all of our students, whatever options they and their families choose. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the first item, which is just an update on charter schools. This is just for information. This is an update provided by the charter school office. It's provided via a written report. We have Kim Klein, who will be on the line. She is the associate secretary at the Operations Support Department of Education. And so rather than just have us run through all of that, I'm just going to open it up to the floor for board members, specifically for the written report. So any questions or comments that are related to applications for new charter schools or modifications, we will hold those until the right time on the agenda. So this is just about the charter school update. Any questions or comments? I have one, but I'm going to wait until every other board member has. Actually, I'm going to wait and put mine where it belongs on the agenda. So with that, okay, we're going to move on to the next, which is going to be the licensure and certification for educators in charter schools. Again, this is just for information. I'm going to open the floor to our Deputy Attorney General, Ms. Jaros, who is on the line. She's going to provide some background and context on the matter. And before she does that, I'm just going to kind of outline what some of those next steps are. So next steps are within the purview of the Professional Standards Board. So that would be Dr. Bradshaw, who was just up a minute ago. They have discussed this matter at their March meeting. There will be a follow-up conversation at the April meeting. And we can actually have her give a brief summary of the discussion that she had in March and kind of those next steps in April. But first, we're going to open it up to Ms. Jaros.
Thank you very much. And I have a bit of a cold, so I couldn't be there with you and share that. So I apologize for that. Last year, the State Board asked whether administrators in charter schools were required to be licensed and certified. The answer to that question took way longer than you would think, because the 3 attorneys assigned to the Department of Education got together to co-author a memorandum on the issue. So that would be myself, Laura McCransky, and Daryl Parson. We provided a memorandum to the SBE as well as the Professional Standards Board and Secretary Holodick about a month or so ago. The answer, in short, is yes. All teachers, administrators, and specialists in charter schools must be licensed and certified in accordance with 14 Delaware Code, Chapter 12. Chapter 12 is the statute that establishes the Professional Standards Board to work in conjunction with the Department of Education to develop a system of licensure and certification that serves to improve the quality of the educator workforce in Delaware, as well as student performance in Delaware public schools. Chapter 12 defines an educator as a person licensed and certified by the state under this chapter to engage in the practice of instruction, administration, or other professional sports services in Delaware schools, including charter schools. So the important language in that provision is both the word administration as well as including charter schools. The memorandum we provided recommended several next steps, including that the Department of Education address the issue and the confusion through legislative changes, working with PSB to develop regulations or ARC programs specific to charter schools. The emphasis of the memorandum is that these are recommendations. We made recommendations, but they're not set in stone. And it is up to the Department of Education, with the support of the SBE and the PSB, to drive forward any changes they choose to implement to address the issue in Delaware schools. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we want to have Dr. Bradshaw speak first, and then let's open it up and the two of you can field questions?
That's fine as well.
So the PSB discussed the DOJ opinion regarding charter school administrators at its March meeting. And the main question for the PSB is whether to develop a new regulation specifically to certify charter school administrators. And the board is disinclined to create such a certification, and very much at that meeting during the discussion felt that charter school leaders should be held to the same standard as administrators in district schools. However, they also asked for further information, which will be discussed at the next meeting. And if the department wishes to pursue a code change that would allow for a charter school permit, the PSB would also be involved in creating a regulation for that. But I believe it is the department that needs to initiate that.
Okay, with that, I am going to open it up now. This is clearly a topic that's come up multiple times in front of us. So any questions for either Ms. Jaros or Dr. Bradshaw?
Yes, this is Lo Feng. Just a quick question, and this might be a very obvious, and I may be missing it, but why was the Department of Justice required to come in or you ask them their opinion on something like this?
We weren't required, but I believe it was a board meeting way back in the summer when the issue of whether or not charter school administrators needed to be licensed came up, and upon investigation, it was an area in which there seemed to be a number of charter schools where you had different positions that were kind of acting in a head of school way, but perhaps not in the way of a principal or assistant principal, and so we, in addition to that, the language in chapter 12 and chapter 5 were a bit confusing. So it all started with the language of chapter 507 AC, which basically said that all teachers in charter schools needed to be licensed and certified, but it didn't provide any language for administration. So we needed to go through and analyze that on a much higher level. So the answer to the question is the DOJ didn't have to wade in, but we did because we thought that this was an issue that was causing confusion with the charter schools and with the Department of Education. We wanted to make sure that we provided a little clarity and some recommendations for a way forward for everyone.
Thank you. That was helpful. Thank you.
A question about the practical impact of sort of where we are in the app. Obviously, you've made some recommendations about what our potential path forward, but in the absence of that, we have the status quo right now. So what is the implication of the status quo on compliance of those administrators with statutory language as it exists? It may be the case that you're saying it's up to interpretation and you made a recommendation based on that interpretation, or is it more clear to you than that in terms of what the status quo is right now with respect to those individuals?
Well, I think you bring up an interesting question, which is that the Chapter 12 doesn't contain an unlicensed practice provision at all. And that was one of the recommendations we kind of made. Because without that, there's really not an enforcement mechanism that we can push forward at this point. I mean, we do have the charter school office, we do have the CSAC and whatnot, but this, I think that what we have started to do in the last little while, and Linnea, you might know a little bit, well, you might know a little bit this, we've been at the charter school office through Kim Klein, and oh, she might be able to help with this, has been starting to emphasize the requirements that we expect teachers as well, teachers to be licensed and certified, as well as administrators, starting to get to push on that and to move the button away from the initial language of 507C, which kind of left this gray area in which charter schools were thinking, okay, I only need 65% of my teacher base to be certified, that's okay. And so I believe the charter schools office has been kind of moving that towards, look, we're looking for 100% compliance. But as for enforcement, like I said, there's not an unlicensed practice provision like you see in some of the other professional regulations. What that would look like in reality, I think we would want to talk about that more with the Department of Education. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
I would, I'll chime in here and suggest that the department would be interested in taking a more supportive than compliance approach at this point, being that this is new information to the charter office and the charter schools. I think it's safe to say we're not interested in turning things upside down in our charter schools over this certification issue. We're happy to have clarity on it. And based on what I've heard through just a few conversations with our folks at the department, we're going to continue to approach this with the support model in mind and not a heavy stick. We'll work with the charter school office, our charter schools, to, you know, get to compliance. I think that's the sensible approach here.
Any other questions or comments on this particular issue?
I would just like to have a comment. I'm not proposing a solution or a path forward, just an observation as I interpret the issue. I do see the need for some type of uniformity in the attempt to bring into compliance, if you would, a uniform set of standards for administrators, both public and charters. But then I started to ask myself, because of what I understand, the nuances of charter schools are different in some ways than the public school system. And there are some skill sets, perhaps, that are required from a charter school, perhaps because of their mission and agenda. And it led me to ask the question, the charter schools that are successful have administrators that are not in compliance and are doing a great job at educating and being effective. And I'd like to kind of look into that data to see if there's a correlation between that, because if we bring it up to a standard, are we doing it for the uniformity's sake, or are we doing it because there are some skill sets in certain charters that are requires a different level of talent and skills? So that was just my thought and what I was thinking. So that was my reflection on the issue.
I think that's a fantastic question. I would break it down, and we have to think about how we want to define success too, in terms of growth levels, right? Because not every school has the same starting point. So thinking about how do we actually measure that? And there's so much data out there. And that's one of the things that we're looking at as we go through these modifications and new applications. But I think that's really a great starting point. I don't know who kind of data, but I think that'd be really valuable to know, because the charter schools, their remit for some of those individuals in terms of what we expect of them. But then again, there are some baselines that perhaps they need to have.
This is Audrey Noble. If I might say something, first of all, I'd like to apologize for being late. I had all kinds of technological problems tonight. But I'd also like to say that I know that I was part of the initial conversation about this issue. It was brought to me by a variety of people working in the field in educational leadership support. And I understand that there are uniqueness to jobs and charter schools, but I also think there are unique skills that are needed to be a leader of a VOTEC, to be a leader of a magnet school, to be a leader of an elementary school. But I also, I think at the core of this issue is that, do we believe in professional standards for our educational leaders, or do we not? And our licensure and certification system is built on those professional standards. And as long as charter schools are defined as public schools, I concur that the issue is that they should be licensed and certified to at least to meet those standards. Those additional skills, in my mind, are supplemental, but the core of professionalism is something that I don't think that we should compromise for any professional educational leader of a school, regardless of the type of school that it is. So that's my thought on that. And I appreciate all the work that the DOJ did on this. I know it was a long haul. It was a complicated issue. And I hope that we can move forward. I sat in on the PSB meeting, and it was an interesting question, and perhaps somebody can give us more insight into this. I think it was Mr. Dempsey that brought the issue up of, like, how did we get here? How did we get to the point where we have 50% of the school leaders in charter schools who are not licensed or not certified? How did we get there? Does anybody have any insight into that? I don't have enough history to really say so.
Well, I think it's combination, getting a lot of feedback, but I think it is a combination of the fact that there was confusion, and that we do not have an unlicensed practice provision, and when I mean, frankly, if district schools had the leeway or thought they could hire unlicensed leaders, some of them might do that. Because we all know people with extraordinary talent who may be capable of doing something, but we do believe that professional standards are very important to ensure that we have some baseline level of knowledge and quality. And so it can be It can be a balance, but I do think that it was more of a confusion about what really needed to happen and the overall freedom that was given to charter schools in the when they were first established.
Thank you for that.
Any other questions or comments?
I would just like to say, this is Shelby Ferris. I think that, as other people have said, it would be very important to not like flip everything upside down as we're taking this issue into practice, and actually like presenting it to those who aren't necessarily in compliance. But I do think it is important for everybody to come to a baseline, whether that's charter or public. Well, I guess charter is public, but you know what I mean. But my question is, where did this come up? Like, what was the context behind it? I wasn't there for that meeting. Why was this brought up in the first place?
Audrey was the one that was closest to it. Audrey, do you want to speak to it? I believe it came from one of our modifications or renewals. I mean, that would have been clear, but you might have a little bit more detail, and we can just give a brief overview of it, and then we can do a deeper dive if you need more.
Thank you.
Audrey, did you want to spend
time? Yeah, I can. It was a while back, so I'm trying to put together. It was during one of the modifications or renewal conversations about one of the charter schools. And actually, the issue came to our attention from a group of professionals who were providing professional development from the Delaware Academy of School Leadership. They were working with the school, and they were very concerned about the what became to them to seem to be a high number of leaders who were not credentialed. And then at that point, there was also discussion at one of the DPAS meetings that with one of the DOE professionals at that time. And I asked him to look into that and pull some deeds information. And that kind of started the examination of the issue, because it started anecdotally and I just felt we needed data. So then there was an examination of all the charter schools in the state, all their leaders and their levels of licensure and certification. At that point, we saw that there was a very high percentage of people calling themselves other than principals, heads of schools, executive directors, CEOs, and were not credentialed or licensed to be school leaders. So that was what initiated it. Then I think the conversation went on to, well, part of the confusion is in code, is in law. And that's when we asked for a DOJ opinion, because there was confusion there. So that was when Ms. Jaros and the other attorneys took a look at it. So it's been a long process, but it actually came from a concern in the field.
Now, and I think that's good background. To the extent you want a deeper dive, we can try to dig back, but it has been a while. I think Dr. Navel gave a really good explanation of that.
No, thank you. That answers it entirely.
Okay, perfect. I would just note too, and this is not in any way a criticism of a charter school or any reflection that those individuals might not in fact be doing a very good job in their schools. This is something different. And you know, just a clarity, and I've heard the word confusing and confusion several times as we've talked through this. So I think, you know, where it started and where we are today, I just want to be really clear that this is not, I think Dr. Bradshaw said it with respect to the idea that there's a lot of really talented people who might not have a certification. But I just kind of want to throw that out just to be really clear on that. So I know we'll learn more. This is not really in, you know, kind of our next step, but since this is something that had come up in front of us, I do think that it was worth having that dialogue. Are there any more questions? I know we'll hear more because there will be the April meeting. So Dr. Bradshaw will be back in front of us, but anything else on this issue before we move on?
Go ahead, Mr. Loafing.
Madam President, just real quick, going back to charter school law was passed in very close time to the School Choice Act. It was sure to come up with a charter school law and school choice legislation, quite frankly, in the legislature at the time, I think we bear some of the responsibility of pushing something through with really compressed timeframes at the time, and forcing it on the Department of Education. Maybe it was called the Department of Public Instruction at that time, so quickly that it left a lot to be desired. So it's not necessarily the Department of Education or Public Instruction back then, any specific individual's fault. I think it was just that political pressure at that time, get this done, pass this law. And it was from the governor on down, and the push was on. And so I think some of it was us or the legislators at that time, not necessarily, we got to get it off our table. We got to get it off our plate. Let's vote for it. Let's go home. I think that's the kind of environment it was at that time. So if that makes any sense at all, but it wasn't necessarily a good, well-planned beginning.
No, thank you. That's actually quite interesting color. Anything else from board members?
I just want to say quickly, so I think I'm in line with comments made by Dr. Noble and Dr. Holodick. I think Reverend Powell's comments are interesting about special skill sets. Could we look at certificate programs in higher ed that support charter schools? And I think we have to bear in mind that it's not a small issue, as we have, I believe, 12% of students in charter schools, 15 in some areas, and with all the continuing new applications, we could be looking to up to 20% of our students. So addressing the issue now, I think, is important.
Yeah, that's well said. All right, with that, thank you both. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda. I know more to come on that. These are major modifications. Again, this is for information. So as we discussed last month, we have 2 major modification applications in front of us. Documentation has all been posted for CSAC's consideration. That link is available via our eBoard site. We have to make our decision. I know I say this repeatedly on the record that comes before us. So this is the best time to ask questions or concerns that you want our board representatives to address during the CSAC process. So they need to come out here so they can get to CSAC and be on the record. The impact cannot be considered for these major modifications. So first, Dr. Lofink, you have been participating on our behalf at CSAC. So I'm going to open the floor to you to make any comments on the process.
I started to talk while I was muted. I attended the Eastside and the Academia major modification meetings, first meetings. The schools have responded to CSAC's questions in their initial report, and I believe that we received information today from Mr. Travers on both schools. Once again, these are existing schools. And Eastside Charter involves a major construction project, which I think is interesting, tied to some community redevelopment of Riverside, which I think is very interesting. And then the Academia is something completely different. It involves them moving from their Wilmington location at the Barley Mill Plaza to Newark down off of Chapman Road. So, and as a result, that opens up some space at Odyssey, and then will have an impact on a minor modification, which we don't vote on. So that would be my comments on that. And if there's any additional questions, please forward those to myself or Ms. Honor prior to our final meeting. So the Academia meeting will be March 22nd. The Eastside meeting will be March 29th.
No, I know there's been a lot of questions that have already been forwarded to you. And so they may already be in your hands, but anything else that anyone wants to raise at this point in time in the meeting? Okay, then I'm going to move on. Thank you very much. And just for anyone that is listening, a written public comment continues until April 11th. We make our decision at the May 2nd meeting, or we will assent to the secretary's recommendation at the May 2nd meeting. So, and just also to note for anyone that we did actually move our April meeting to May 2nd. So just to make sure people are aware of that change. So thank you, Dr. Lofink. The next item on the agenda is a minor modification application, and this is for information. Then I would just note that since our last meeting, there was a minor modification application for Odyssey Charter School.
and the secretary has asked CSEC to review and make a recommendation on the application. This is a minor modification, so it does not come before the state board for approval. Dr. Lofink is also participating on our behalf on CSEC. So again, I know you referenced them, so I don't know if you want to make any additional comments at this time. If so, the floor is yours.
My only comment would be that this will impact on the number of seats of charter school seats, that's a percentage of public school students in Newcastle County that is approaching a solid number. But we'll be talking about that in later comments. And that, once again, as you said, it's something that we're not, that we don't act on as a state school board.
Does anyone have any questions? I know I have one, but again, I'm going to open it up to the board before I ask. Anyone, any questions on Odyssey? This is just, this is more a question, I would say, for Kim Klein. And when I looked at this, by the third year, it gets to 14.98% in an increase. And at 15%, and someone can correct me if I'm getting my numbers wrong, at 15% is when it actually would be a major modification and would come in front of us. So my question is, how often do we see minor modifications that are like literally 2 basis points underneath where it would actually get a greater level of scrutiny? Because, but that's my question. And maybe you can tell me if I'm misreading something, but that's my ask.
Yeah, so we'd have to go back and look in history to see how many times this has happened. It's the first time since I've been in this position, but that's just a year and a half now. So we can certainly go back and take a look at that and provide you with some information. I think the reason we sent it to CSAC is because it bumps so closely up against that 15%. And we've been having some discussions internally about where we might want to draw a line to make it a uniform policy to send applications that are this close to the 15% through that formal process moving forward. So this is the first time that I've had one be so close, and we elected to go through a formal process. And like I said, I think we will draw a line and continue that moving forward.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think making that recommendation to go through that more rigorous process, I think there's a lot of value to that. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, anyone? If I might add to that, I believe it's always the discretion of the Secretary of Ed, Dr. Holodick, to make a recommendation or to if something comes through, regardless of the numbers, that he can refer the application to CSAC. So, and I was glad to see that that happened in this regard. I think it was his decision to turn it over to CSAC to have them look at this. I know in the time that was on CSAC, there were a couple other schools that came up that were right under the cutoff in the law, and they did not come to CSAC. And it was, you know, you feel like there's some game playing going on. So it's nice that the secretary recognizes it's his discretion, and if there are times when it looks like it's going to be close to that cutoff, that it go through the full review of CSAC. I'm glad to hear that Kim's in line with that and that we'll continue that practice. So thank you.
And I just want to add, it doesn't come in front of us, but Vince is still, or Dr. Lofink is still representing us. So if people have questions that they want to be put on the record, they do need to continue our standard process, even if we are not actually assenting to the decision. Okay. Anything else with respect to the minor modification? Okay, then I'm gonna keep going through. So the next on the, and again, as a reminder, written public comment is open until April 14th. So the next item on the agenda are the new charter school applications. Again, these are for information only. We discussed last month, there were 2 new charter school applications. The documentation was posted for CSAC's consideration. That link is available to our eBoard site. I am going to make a note before, and I noted that when I started the whole charter school section, that Frieri did withdraw their application this morning. So we do only have 1 in front of us. So that is all we're going to be discussing tonight. The document, as a reminder, again, we make our decision on the record that comes before us, so make sure you ask your questions here. So for the new school applications, approval criteria that can be considered in our decision is outlined in state code and regulation. I don't know if we're going to pull this up on the screen, but all of this, the most relevant sections of the law have been shared amongst all of the board members. They're on our e-board. And again, we have Dr. Lofink and Dr. Noble. I know I had a professor, Dr. Link, years and years ago, just a slip. Sorry.
Fits him well.
Dr. Lofink. Dr. Lofink and Dr. Noble for their willingness to participate in CSAC. Dr. Lofink is doing or is currently doing Brian Allison Stevenson School. Dr. Noble spent a lot of time working on Freire Charter Network. So at this point in time, I am going to open the floor to Dr. Lofink. Actually, I don't know Dr. Noble, but I don't really know. Excuse me. I think we're going to. Sorry, that one is closed for now. So I think we're just going to go ahead. I apologize. All of a sudden, I don't know if there's water in here. We have gifts, so perhaps there's water. So we're going to open it up to Dr. Lofink.
Thank you, Madam President. And we can, you know, the Dr. Lofink, we can make this the last meeting. I'll just go back to Vinny or whatever. It's going to look good in my obituary, though. The Brian Stevenson School, if we have any additional questions, questions were submitted about their graduation retention policies, their facilities, lease, and their financial information. And the final meeting will be held on March 24th. Please share your questions with Ms. Honor I prior to that meeting. And if there's any other specific questions, and I'll have something maybe a little bit to throw in about this later on when we talked a little about impact. But that would be about it, unless Dr. Noble, you have a specific comment or whatever on this. No. Ms. Klein? Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying if there was a specific issue or concern before the final meeting on the 24th, I was not aware, other than the questions we asked about the facilities and lease, financial information, and graduation and retention policies, that there was no other noted concern that I okay, thank
correct.
You. Okay.
We do have a conversation around impact that is not part of this section. So to the extent anyone has questions on impact, we are holding them to the next item agenda. So are there questions with respect to the application outside of impact? Okay, I'm going to take that silence for a no. So we're going to move on to impact conditions for new charter school applications. This is for discussion and potential action. So according to state code and regulations, if the board would like to propose impact conditions on the approval of the Brian Allen Stevenson School of Excellence, those conditions must be discussed and voted on during the board's March tonight state board meeting. Discussion and motions to propose a condition must include justification for the condition and proposed. The proposed condition and justification for the condition will then be captured in writing by Ms. Honor and submitted to the department's charter office. If the board votes to propose a condition at the March meeting, the condition would be discussed and considered by CSAC as well as the secretary and making his final decision, which will be brought to the board on May 2nd. Any condition put forward by the board in March may be rejected by the secretary in making his final decision, and it may also be rejected by the board on May 2nd if additional information negates the board's justification for the condition. However, if a condition is not proposed at this meeting, it may not later be added in May. The department has not chosen to put any impact conditions on Brian Allen Stevenson School of Excellence at this time. So to better understand the impact of the proposed new schools, the state board CSAC representatives requested that the department gather information to be included as part of the record. The information includes, there's a long list, a list of all Delaware public high schools within a 15-mile radius of the proposed location, student demographic breakdowns of each school within that radius, wait lists for each school, college and career readiness metrics as measured by the DSSF by subgroup, graduate enrollment in college by subgroup, current enrollment as a percentage of total capacity for each high school, projected impact on the revenue of other LEAs, past 5-year enrollment trends and projected enrolled for all Newcastle County charter schools based on previously approved applications, and information regarding current new school applicants and major modification applicants. most of the information has been incorporated as part of the record listed on the charter school site, with the exception of the subgroup academic information. That's low income, ELL, special education, and the projected impact on the revenues on other LEAs. Now, a lot of that information references Newcastle County. That's because up until this morning, Freire was a large part of our conversation. And we did actually also receive some, a public comment. I'm trying to think how it, because it's officially not part of the record until it's submitted. And Carla, if she's still on, can make sure I'm using the right language. But we did receive a letter responding to impact from Brandywine School District. So I just want to be clear that that was all related to Newcastle County. So, but this is what's been requested. Some of it's relative to Bass and some of it's not. So I'm going to just recommend that we kind of walk through Bass with Bass, Brian Allen Stevenson School of Excellence, with Dr. Lofink. He's our CSAC recommendation. So do you have any opening comments that you want to set the stage with for that one?
Well, I did want to make a general comment to try to clarify some previous comments that I made in January and February meetings. If you don't want me to do that, just specifically on the Brian Allen Stevenson School, as far as community impact or local impact, most of the surrounding schools at Indian River School District are pretty much, I'm not going to say they're filled up, but they're pretty much closing in on capacity. So I don't think there would be any negative impact regarding the Indian River School District per se. And that to me would be about the only other something that I would be concerned. That would be something that I would be concerned about. But other members of the state board may have concerns about other types of impact, whether it be financial or other aspects of this.
I know this is one that we spent a lot of time on last year. I think it's a strong application in front of us. And some of the concerns that we had last year were addressed in this new application. I have only seen one letter directly stating impact, and that was Newcastle County. Is there anything, and this is actually, I guess, more for the charter school office, and you're shaking your head. So no, we have not gotten anything from any surrounding schools that have expressed concerns around impact.
That's correct.
Okay. Anything else from any board members on this issue? Okay.
Excuse me. I'd like to make a general statement about impact, if I may. I realize that we're not talking about Freire in particular, but I think there were enough public comments that came forward that I'd just like to talk about some information in general. Ms. Honor, I think I forwarded you some information that perhaps you could get for the board from the impact statement. Do you have it, Jenna? Jenna, are you on playing with the baby, Jenna?
I'm here. I'm showing it in the room, so you can go ahead and talk if you're able to, and I'll put a link in the chat for anyone that wants to.
You see it when?
I can see it. It's far away. I can see it.
Okay. So I'm not sure what she's showing you right now. But I guess I'd just like to start and this issue of consideration of impact. I know this has caused some confusion for us in the past, but the reason I wanted to bring it up tonight is that in this particular aspect of code, it clearly says that the state board may use public comments and information from the public record to inform the development of any proposed conditions. And I believe that Ms. Sweeney referred to that earlier. And I'd like to speak specifically to community impact that is defined by projected social, cultural, demographic, environmental, economic trends and effects on the surrounding area. And as I said, I recognize that our decisions about charter schools cannot be based primarily on impact criteria according to code. However, during our public hearings, and based on some written comments that we received, impact and capacity seem to be particular concerns of many of our Newcastle County residents. I think it would be remiss of us not to at least address those concerns since we are a citizens board. I think that, so I would like to submit some of these data projections to be part of the record, because I do think that they may have some influence on our thinking related to the other modifications that are before us. The first chart, are you showing them the first chart, Jenna?
Yes.
Okay. The first chart shows the increase in seats within charter schools in Newcastle County, should all of the modifications before us be approved. So you can see the trends over the next 10 years there. The second chart is from the Delaware Population Consortium. It's a state of Delaware organization that in this chart shows the projected school age population estimates over the next 30 years. Now, looking at the projections through 2030, which is the time period during which the requested charter school seats increase significantly, you can see that the school age populations at all three levels are projected to decrease and then level out. So based on these data, I believe it's important that we look at the big picture and start thinking about and recognize the long-term impact and perhaps unintended consequences of making decisions that will continue to expand schools, and ask ourselves, are these decisions fiscally responsible and educationally sound? I bring this up because there have been many comments at the different charter school meetings during their presentations, the charter school application and the modification presentations, where the presenters have made the argument that our students and families need choice. That is, they need more choices of schools to attend and more programs. And in reality, there are currently many school choices in Newcastle County. We have private schools, parochial schools, public schools that include traditional schools, magnet schools, vo-techs, and charters. In Newcastle County, there are more educational choices than anywhere else in the state. And I personally believe that this issue is not of choice, but rather one of opportunity. Our students and their families do not necessarily need more choices or more schools with more seats. They need more quality educational opportunities. And just creating more is not necessarily creating more opportunity. So while I'm not suggesting that we recommend any particular conditions on any of these applications, I do believe that we need to ask ourselves questions and consider them, such as, does the request provide for more quality opportunities for students, or are they just asking for more seats? I think that it's imperative that our board start taking a more holistic view of our educational system. We are a system of public schools, and we are responsible for all of our children. And currently, the way we think about this is more of a siloed, the public schools, the traditional schools, and then we think about the charter schools separately. And I think as the State Board of Education, we need to be thinking about our schools holistically. So I just wanted to bring that information forward. It comes from not only public record and public comments, but also from the different presentations that I've visited in on. So just wanted to bring that forward as a general comment and encourage the board to be thinking about these things as we make these decisions moving forward.
Thank you. Madam President, if I might add, I agree with Dr. Noble wholeheartedly, and I also see it as a matter of the state being able to carry out efficiently and effectively our public education policy. What we've done is we've created a system of fragmented governance. For example, we may have 19 school districts in the state, but with the 21 additional state authorized charters, we actually have 40 school districts. It just seems to be that in and of itself in a small state, leads to a fragmentation of governance and has created some additional issues that Dr. Nobles has touched base on. I also am taken with the fact that currently in Newcastle County, 17% of our students attend charter schools. 15% would be state chartered. 2 would be the Red Clay's school chartered items. School district chartered schools with Red Clay. We have an issue of a fragmenting governance. Is it make it more difficult to carry out public education policy? And we've talked about some of these issues tonight, even with regarding to the certification of leadership. I don't necessarily have that answer, but when I talked kind of about this before, Mr. Rushton in his wisdom said, we might not be able to immediately affect it, but we can, Vince, don't always point over to legislative hall, but we may be able to bring about the discussion and conversation that may help create some of these kinds of changes or consideration of these types of changes. That's all. Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Dr. Noble.
I think those are excellent points. Before I respond, does anyone else on the board want to say something? Okay. I think you've raised excellent points, as I just noted. I am going to just take it back to what is within our purview because I feel the need to do that. We can only consider impact for BASS tonight. So it is great information. It starts a dialogue. And I think, and this gets back to what Mr. Rushton has said and Dr. Lofink just pointed to, is that we are a citizens board and we create a platform for discussion. So if we aren't having these conversations here, they may not get picked up and carried and end up in legislative hall. Because it's our job to actually try to raise conversations and awareness. And I think those are great points. When I saw the chart that Dr. Noble put together and you look at declining population at the same time that you're increasing seats, then, you know, it does beg the question, why do you need increased seats? Particularly when you have empty seats and, you know, Christina obviously is the one that stands out. You know, you've got some of the high schools that aren't filling their high schools and then we're looking to put another high school. So I think those are great points. It's the start of a dialogue, which I'm sure we're going to have, you know, kind of going forward, welcoming, you know, the Department of Education and Secretary Holodick and, you know, certainly, you know, critical to that conversation. So I think it was really good information as we kind of take that next step forward. So with that in front of us tonight is the BASS and any recommendations with respect to impact on that school. So does anyone have, I mean, if I've heard correctly, I think Dr. Lofink's recommendation is that there is not, the board does not want to put an impact condition on that school, but I'm not going to speak for you, so you can confirm if that is or is not accurate, and then I'm going to open it up to other board members because they may feel differently.
That is accurate in my opinion, but I would like to hear other board members' discussions, especially those who have maybe involved with this process, with the Charter School Accountability Committee processes.
So does any board member want to discuss putting a impact condition on BASS?
If I might say, because I was involved in this last year, you know, as I reviewed their application this year, I saw that they were responsive to all the concerns that the board forwarded last year. We didn't put conditions on them, but we raised hard questions and then they withdrew their application. I don't see any need for any impact conditions on them at this point in time. I think CSAC can make a good decision on BASS with what they have before them.
Reverend Powell, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I would probably agree with Dr. Noble also, but I wanted to kind of give another perspective from the prior conversation about the data that was shared. When I was in seminary, my professor told me one time not to hold on to your theology so tight, to have it, to leave room for other discussions and opinions. And so I've taken that position, and even on this issue, I've not held on to my position that tightly because I'm hearing both sides on this issue. When I go to a public forum and I hear parents speak about being if you would force into a failing system and not having another perhaps unique opportunity for their child, if in fact a charter school was introduced that was generic and specific to their particular needs where they could succeed. And I'd have to put myself, remove myself from the board and then put myself in the seat of a parent and think about my child and how I would view this opportunity or this, the lack thereof. And so I guess I'm just open and I appreciate the data and the research. And I do believe that the other perspective or the voice for those who are opposing that position needs to be represented also. So that's what I just would want to say today.
No, thank you. You always have good perspective. Thank you. Other comments from the board members? Okay. I think at this point in time, we are not going to have a motion on the table because there is no one wants to have an impact condition put on the table. So we don't need to do that. So we're going to move on. And as I said, Freire is off the table. So we are now moving on to the period in the agenda where we can have a public comment on charter schools. And time has been set aside at this point in the agenda just for public comment on charter schools. The opportunity to sign up for public comment was available via email prior to this meeting. If you did not sign up and plan to provide public comment on regulations and are logged in via the URL, please type in your name, organization, and comment topic into the chat box now. If you're only participating via phone and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in via the meeting URL. Please note, the board does not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with anyone offering comments during the board meeting. And I would also note that in order for the board to consider public comment as part of the record regarding charter schools, the comment must also be submitted in writing. Jenna, can you put this up on the board so everyone can see it? Or via public hearing. And actually, after you get that up, you can tell me if we have anyone signed up for public comment.
We do have one public comment. It's Kendall Nask.
Okay. Are you signed up? You are or you're not? You are. We have. Okay. So why don't we take Kendall first and then we'll get. Are you the only one signed up for public comment?
Sorry.
No. Yes, would you mind? Thank you. But while we do that, and thank you, we're going to go directly to Kendall Massett. Thank you. Sorry, I'm looking around the room, but thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
If you could speak a little, we can't hear you that well.
How's that? Is that better?
That is better. Yes. Kendall, I know you've done this before, but you are speaking for an organization. So if you can provide your name, the organization that you're speaking for, and because you are an organization, you get 3 minutes and we are going to start the timer when you start talking.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. Yesterday, I made public comment during the House Education Committee in support of House Bill 300. 16 of our 23 charter schools across the state would be directly impacted by this legislation. I had an incredibly hard time not only making those comments yesterday, but in just writing them. While I could have just stood up and said, "We support this bill," I instead made my comments from my heart. My comments there apply to my comments to you here, not all of them, but with the spirit of what I was trying to get across. So I will repeat some of those here. Each year, I cannot wait to see the final September 30th count because it lets me know how many students, how many lives I will be advocating for, that I will be, in many cases, fighting for. This year, our schools have 17,201 students that they are serving. 15,635 of them are in charter schools that are authorized by the state, by you. But that number isn't actually correct. That number has changed throughout the year. I couldn't tell you exactly the number right now. I don't and will not change that number and how I speak about our schools until the next September 30th count comes out. Some of the change in number is normal. It's families moving, parents making decisions for their children. But there are other reasons that our numbers drop. Those that break my heart into pieces. Accidents that claim the lives of our students too soon. Violence in our cities that claim the lives of children that are just trying to do the next right thing. And then there's the unthinkable, when one of our students takes their own life. this January, one of those 17,201 children did just that. I say this to you to say, we have real issues that we must address. Mental health concerns for our students, our families, our educators, and our staff are real. But recently, all we do is talk about inputs, not about outcomes. The licensure and certification conversation is exactly that. No piece of paper can tell us whether or not someone is going to be a good leader or even a good teacher. The original idea of charter schools was to think about our children and how to make an incredible positive impact on the lives of those that have, in many cases, been left behind and underserved. The idea was to allow us to be innovative and find ways outside of the bureaucratic box to provide educational opportunities to meet the various needs of children. But over the last 25 years, our flexibilities have been taken away, in many cases, by this body. There is no confusion for our schools. We are not supposed to be like district schools, and continuing to push that we are begs the question as to what you want. Innovation, success for students. I can answer Reverend Powell's questions from earlier. The leaders that are uncertified are at successful schools, many of which have been in this work since close to the beginning. Suggesting that these leaders are not professional or qualified because they don't meet the PSB or state board ideas of what a school leader looks like is just wrong. I will end where I began. Our students are children. We do this work for them and the educational outcomes for them.
Ask you to stop. I hate cutting people off, but if I do it to you, then I have to do it. I can't do it to anybody else. And we've had meetings where we've had a lot of comments. So I apologize to cut you off, but we have 3 minutes. Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Frank Newton from Newark Charter School. So we are going to do the same for you. So we will have 3 minutes. I know you are representing Newark Charter, so you do have 3 minutes, and we will start the clock. If you could introduce yourself and the organization that you're representing.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Frank Newton, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as head of school at Newark Charter School. Before we go further, let me reinforce that charter schools are public schools. And let me also clearly state that as educators, all of the charter school leaders that I know want what is best for all students, to advocate that every student in Delaware is funded equitably and fairly and has the opportunity to get a world-class education that is right for them. Every student deserves the opportunity to choose the school that is right for them, and they should not be referred to as commodities that are won and lost in the process. Traditional districts do not lose students due to the existence of charter schools. My school exists because the local school district was not serving the academic needs of all its learners, nor working with parents to develop ways to meet those needs. That group of dedicated and committed parents worked together to propose and open Newark Charter School 20 years ago. Demand does not increase because there are more charter options. Instead, charter schools exist because there is demand and an unmet need for choice. Those choices that are right for and work for all students and families in our communities. Parents don't leave systems that are meeting their children's needs. They leave when they feel those needs are not being met. Thousands of students in Delaware submitted choice applications this year, which is consistent with prior years. Those students are looking for opportunities in other traditional school districts, vo-techs, charters, and other choice schools. Not all of those families will be able to get their choice. Forcing students to stay where they seek not to be by limiting viable and desired choice options for families is not an appropriate response. We all want high-quality public schools in Delaware, and charter schools have opened in response to that demand. It is clear that several legislators and some members of this very board are actively working toward rules and legislation that is fully intended to eliminate, limit, and put significant restrictions on school choice options for all families. At the risk of sounding alarmist, we are facing what appears to be a real existential threat to school choice and the very existence of charter schools in the state of Delaware. Whether it be limiting school options, inequitably funding charter schools, or seeking legislation that undoes the very foundations of flexibility and innovation that are the heart of the charter school law that has existed in Delaware since 1991, there are those that would remove charter schools from the educational landscape of Delaware. Shame on them for not seeking the best options for families in our state. All of Delaware's children deserve a high-quality education and school experience. Now more than ever, we need to work together to continue improving public education in Delaware. Undermining successful charter schools and limiting student choice or by hurting charter schools is not the way to accomplish that goal. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments. The next, do we have anyone else that signed up? Okay, great. Thank you both. We appreciate your comments. and you do have 9 seconds left. I'm sorry. I know. I am consistent on that. So I'm just, I am consistent. Carla likes that about me.